thought disorders in general. And so hallucinations, schizophrenics tend to hear voices. Over time, they have diminished capacity to have, you know, emotional connections with people and with their lives. It's a devastating disease for individuals and families, and it affects approximately one person in every 100.
Is there a cure?
There's not really a cure right now. There's treatment, and there's great hope for people who get treatment, and the sooner the better. But people at any age can get help.
Now, is it a sudden onslaught or is it a sign? Do you see signs of someone developing schizophrenia?
I think a very sensitive, careful observer might see signs. Although people who are afflicted are sometimes aware of it before anyone else and tend to hide the signs if they're able to. But then eventually there's what's called a psychotic break when somebody has some kind of extreme experience that's impossible to hide. And so it might seem sudden, but usually there are gradual signs.
Now, it can affect siblings.
I think siblings tend to be 10 times more likely than the general population to get the disease. And so because there is a genetic factor, although it is not only genetic. So if you have a sibling who is schizophrenic and you're within the danger zone of age, you have a 10% chance. That's a 1 in 10 rather than a 1 in 100 chance of getting the disease.
A lot of schizophrenics, let's just say about a quarter of schizophrenics are either, hospitalized or become suicidal and succeed, correct?
Yeah, that's true. The rate of death is very high, and it's mostly due, to suicide and then also homelessness, because a lot of homeless people are undiagnosed schizophrenics who just can't adapt to society.
Tell us about your sister.
Excuse me?
Tell us about Barb.
Yeah, Barb is a wonderful, interesting, extremely intelligent person and who has this disease called schizophrenia. And she was really an extraordinary young woman and vivacious and very, very bright and beautiful, as you can see if you get the book.
Yeah, I do. I have it on the cover. She's a beautiful lady.
She's a beautiful lady. Yeah, she is. And she was very lively and active, and she wanted to be a writer, and it's kind of a family affliction. And she in college, she began, maybe she began to show signs. She's 11 years older than I am. Mm-hmm. So my perspective on her is very skewed. I admired her very much as a child, and her, her behavior, if it was kind of, eccentric or extreme, just seemed glamorous to me and high-spirited. But then she married a young graduate student from Iraq, and when he finished his PhD in his country, they went over there. But then she was beginning to, kind of show some signs, again, of more erratic behavior. But they stayed over there 3 years, and when she got back, she was just gone. She was like a completely different person. And it was shocking and, of course, devastating to the family.
In what ways? How was she different?
She was different, boy. Well, she looked different. She'd always been petite, but she was just, gaunt and wasted. She couldn't recognize us. She thought we were different people, and she was, my parents told me that when she came back, they picked her up at the airport, and she kept calling out to people. She thought they were me. I came home a couple days later from college. She was speaking in accents. She was laughing, and in this, odd way, she would drop to the floor and laugh and look around fearfully. And, it was extreme and terrified and terrifying behavior.
Yeah, I can imagine. How was she treated? Because we're talking, 30 years ago?
30 years ago. Well, she, it depends on
because we've done a lot of work in the last 30 years with a chemical imbalance and the number of drugs available for all for a wide range of mental illness. How was she treated then, and how did she get well?
Well, she, in a simple word, she was not treated then. she was, my parents protected her and asked her if she wanted to get help, and she said no. And that was about it. They tried to make an appointment for her, and she didn't want to go. And they were terrified of the psychiatric system. They did not want to, you know, sign her over to an institution, you know, commit her. And of course, the, you know, psychiatric care in those days was not nearly, as you say, not nearly as good as it is now. So basically, she was not treated. She was just kept at home and protected.
What about her husband during this time?
Well, he brought her back, and he was a good guy, and he loved her, and he wanted her to get better, and he had to go. So he stayed for the summer. He was a professor, mm-hmm. and then he went back at the end of the summer when she didn't get better. His hope was that he'd bring her back here and get some kind of care or something, and she was getting worse. So he went back and taught for the year, and then came back the next summer, and she was getting worse and worse and worse, and so he went back to Iraq. They eventually divorced. So that was the end of their marriage.
Margaret Hawkins is our guest. The name of her book, How We Got Barb Back. Margaret, it's a terrifying story because so many people in our country know someone with schizophrenia, have a family member with schizophrenia or some other severe mental disease. We normally talk about things like depression and whatever. She didn't get treatment right away. How bad did she get over the 30 years?
Well, she got pretty bad. You know, she got really bad to the point where she wouldn't leave the house. She wouldn't leave the she wouldn't sit at a table to eat with anyone. She always took her food back and ate secretly. She wouldn't answer the phone. She would hardly communicate with anyone or make eye contact. She was extremely isolated. Wouldn't allow herself to be touched, or you couldn't even walk behind her. She was just, you know, fearful.
How did you get her back?
Well, I became her legal guardian after my parents died. My mom died, and then 10 years later, my dad died. And I had, you know, all along wanted to take a more proactive role. But, there was such a delicate balance with her living with my parents. And so after they died, I arranged for caregivers to go to the house so she could remain there. And then I found a social worker who was this incredible person who came to the house and started to come weekly. And she found an amazing psychiatrist who made a house call.
Wow.
Yeah.
Stunning. That may be the biggest stunner of the story.
That's when I decided I had to write a book.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the psychiatrist shows up at the house, and, you know, we're having this conversation. He's saying, well, you know, you should bring her in to visit me. And it's like, well, how do I begin to tell this? She has not left the house in 32 years. So anyway, to make a long story short, he agreed to prescribe something. He prescribed this tiny, tiny little dose, 0.25 milligram of an antipsychotic. And I ran out to the pharmacy and picked it up, and she took her first pill that night. And within days, she was getting better.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. You know, that gives a lot of people hope. And we have mistreated, and most of the time out of love, we have mistreated a lot of mentally ill people because of fear of the psychiatric system, fear of addiction, for want of, you know, I mean, there are lots of great reasons, but
Or even bad drugs that have bad side effects.
But your story of your sister really is there to give a lot of people hope.
I hope so. That's why I wrote the book.
Where is it available?
It's available at Amazon.com. It's available at Barnes & Noble and Borders bookstores. It's available
Do you have a website?
At independent bookstores, too.
Do you have a website?
I have an Amazon page.
Okay.
And you can go to my page on Amazon.com and look at that book and also my other books.
Margaret Hawkins, a real joy. It's nice to have something uplifting.
Thank you.
And I appreciate you joining us, and good luck with the book. It's a great read.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Margaret Hawkins.